Hey girl, hey, and thanks for dropping in to the Switch, Pivot, or Quit podcast. Candid convo for the girl needing a lifestyle plot twist when she's deciding if it's time to switch, pivot, or quit. I'm Ayana Angel, and I am your host as well as chief encourager at Switch, Pivot, or Quit and traditionally published author. If you're not already following us on Instagram, where we always play, be sure to get down with us at Switch, Pivot, or Quit on IG, and don't miss out on our must reads over at the switchpivotorquit.com website. So on today's show, we're chatting with Christine Michelle Carter, who is a global marketing strategist and national speaker with more than 10 years of experience driving results for innovative, category-leading companies. She is a thought leader for marketing to millennial consumers, and as a wife and mother, she has also solidified herself as the voice for millennial moms. She's a regular contributor to Forbes.com and Huffington Post, in addition to having been featured by Women's Health, Ebony, and much more. Super excited to speak with Christine, so let's go ahead and get into it. Thank you so much for joining us today, Christine.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be on the podcast.
We are so excited to have you. I know that you have a lot of wonderful insight and just knowledge and experience that I'm excited for you to share with our listeners. So we're going to get into the social media and influence and all of that kind of stuff. But first, let's chat a bit about you specifically, Christine, as a woman. And it's clear that you have your own presence on social media. And I want to know sort of like, how did you go about getting started in marketing strategy as well as becoming a writer for sites like Forbes and Huffington Post?
Sure. So I had a 9-to-5. I was a director of marketing for a regional retailer here in Baltimore. And I decided that I enjoyed doing their marketing and PR and advertising so much on a smaller scale that I wanted to do that for mom and pop businesses. Mm-hmm. So at 21, I left the company and decided to start my own company. And I worked with small mom and pop shops, first regionally, and then I got a couple of international clients, and felt like I really needed to build credibility for my business, which was called Epps Consulting. Mm-hmm. So I started to reach out to different blogs, different publications to see if I could write for them as, at that time, a Generation Y expert. Nobody calls millennials Generation Y anymore. That's how long I've been talking about being a millennial marketing expert. So I have a number of years under my belt. But mm-hmm. I started off with writing for different journals and blogs and built a lot of credibility for my business, completely unaware that my talent was really in public relations and writing. I never stopped writing or turning down an opportunity to write. And with that came more and more features, even as I went back into corporate America and closed my business. And it became a resume for me. And then the features came with Ebony and Women's Health. And then that's really where I am today now. I'm a global marketing strategist, but I'm also writing for, like, as you said, Forbes and Huffington Post and Health and Inc. and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell us a bit about sort of, you touched on where you are today. So you've had obviously your own switch, pivot, or quit moments and experiences. How did you sort of decide that you wanted to shut down your agency and then go back into the corporate arena? Tell us sort of what your mindset was when you made those decisions.
So I believe that you, and we discussed this, you switch, pivot, or quit in your life at multiple times, not just at a quarter-life crisis or a midlife crisis or anything like that. I feel like you switch, pivot, or quit at different life stages. And for me, I had become a mother. And though I had had a business for 4 years, it became increasingly challenging to bring my daughter to client visits, even though it was still a store and it would be like going to an express on H&M with your child. Mm-hmm. I'm working. So right. I could be shooting the store at the time. I could be trying to get a press release approved. I could be working on putting a pitch together to pitch a client. So it was still very difficult to have my child around. It was difficult to work at home and do editing and website design and logo design and whatnot with my daughter at the time. So I also, and then I also wanted great benefits for myself and my family. So I decided to go back into the corporate world, but As I was saying, entrepreneurship isn't for everybody. It shouldn't be the end all be all for everybody. Sometimes entrepreneurs will and should go back to the corporate world, because when I did finally decide to return, the skills that I gained from entrepreneurship completely gave me a head and an edge of an edge over other people interested in the positions that I was applying for. And when I finally nailed a position, I actually came in at a salary that was 3 times higher than when I left the corporate world.
Wow. Okay, so let's make sure that our listeners digest that. You know, she is basically saying that because you decide to go out and venture out and be an entrepreneur at one point in your life, it does not mean that that is where you have to stay. You can build something amazing. You can be great at what you do in the independent side and the entrepreneurial side, and then you can take those skills back to corporate America and leverage that so that you can have a stronger argument for that salary that you felt so slighted against and you weren't getting before you left corporate America. You know, it's not that corporate America is the enemy. It can definitely be a boost for you in terms of your resume and financially, right?
Oh, that's a lot. That was said much more beautifully than me.
No. And, you know, it's just that I like for people, and I was saying this to you, I like for people to understand their options. Switch, Pivot, or Quit is all about taking action. It's not necessarily just about quitting your job and becoming an entrepreneur. That is a huge trend right now, but that is not all that we will see in this lifetime of ours. And that is not all that you need to be focused on. So I just want people to really understand that you shouldn't be listening to this podcast thinking that you're going to figure out how to quit your job. If that is one thing you were trying to do, great. But Christine is telling you that is not the only way. You can quit your job and then you can go right back in seamlessly too. Like, did you find that you had a hard time transitioning back into corporate America?
I did not. I did not. And that was a part of setting the expectations and communicating clearly with my employer about my work style. The fact that I like to have flexible hours, the fact that I have a family and that needs to be taken into consideration, the fact that I do have an entrepreneurial spirit. I don't think that I would have, or any professional who has an entrepreneurial spirit, would go back to the corporate world and look for a job that was just a pencil pusher. You know, that's not really... There are people who are in the corporate world who have an entrepreneurial spirit. Obviously, they either, you know, were entrepreneurs at one time, or it just happens to be that they had that spirit inside of them and do independent thinking projects and whatnot.
So we have a listener question for you, and it's much more related to, I guess you could say, what you do in the corporate space right now. And she wanted to know, what ways can one build on gaining experience in global strategy? Sometimes positions can be so tactical that employees don't have a chance to learn the strategy aspect of things. So she wants to know, what ways can one build on gaining experience with strategy?
I love this question. I love it. I'm so happy, listener, that you asked this. I struggled with strategy when I owned my own business and really taking on the mindset of being strategic, as most entrepreneurs do. But you have to shift to an impossible creative mindset, or all you're doing is assuming today's realities will be tomorrow's. You must always have an understanding of the internal and external landscape, which can somewhat ground your thinking. So still be creative, but do understand the landscape and the environment in which you're in. When you've done both of those, then you can combine them and take it a step further and ask what if, and think of fresh and futuristic ideas that are grounded in emerging patterns and trends. That's where monitoring the internal and external landscape comes into play. And then from that, you can really get tactical and create scenarios and look at feasibility and build your strategic plan and really get that experience in strategy and corporate strategy. I train myself regularly to think strategically, just like I train at the gym. It's a muscle you have to exercise, and it's not easy, but strategy in itself is about growth.
Right. Now, do you have any types of, let's say, tools or resources that you've come across throughout the years that have helped you to sort of like increase your strategy mindset and thinking, or to help you sort of like with your training on strategy?
I've become more interested in the news around me. I've become more interested in different news outlets and methods of media. And I've found that reading through information that I find and researching the data that's been presented in an article helps me to not only get an understanding of the categories that I'm researching or the external landscape, but it helps me to look at the trends and look at what could possibly be, what emerging patterns are coming out, and to think big picture and think futuristic.
Mm-hmm. I like that you touch on the data side of things because, you know, if you guys don't know, Christine is a data person, okay? She's all about, like, the numbers and what does this really mean? And when you're thinking of strategy, you have to sort of wrap your mind around that. So that's something important that you should take away from that is being able to really also look at the big picture, too. And that's one thing that I think a lot of us struggle with is because we're so consumed with the day-to-day, what's ahead of us, that it's hard to sort of think about 10 years ahead of us, industry-wise or personally. So that is something that you really have to pay attention to when you're talking strategy. And note that she really honed in on those two things, because if you want to get better at it, it might not be something that your company is going to help you to train with or to increase your skill set in. You just might have to do it on your own and get interested
in
these things. You know, so in your opinion, what role does personal development, speaking of all of that, play in a person's quest for a successful professional life?
I think it plays a big part, personal development. I think that you learn time management. I think you, the strengths and your attitudes and your behavior and your belief plays out in the corporate world. So if you're somebody who's extremely organized and pays attention to detail in your personal life, that will manifest itself in your professional life as well, and that will be one of your strengths. Pretty much everything that that makes up a person in their personal life does transcend into their professional career or their professional their professional persona.
Right.
If you're a gossip queen who finds more comfort, who finds more comfort in having conversations with folks, and that's going to manifest itself professionally as well. The persona that you give off personally also it will always come through professionally as well.
Right.
Be it positive or negative.
Yeah, that's something to truly be mindful of for sure. What would you say? I don't want to say fearlessly because I don't know. Maybe I had some fear behind some of these decisions, but you've definitely made some key changes in your life. And it seems as though you sort of embraced the idea of change and action in your life. So what would you say is your number one tip for embracing change in one's life?
That it's going to happen. Change is not something that you can prevent. I think that if you don't embrace change, then you are perhaps someone who struggles with control. And there are so many things in our environment that we can't control, especially when you're a minority, especially when you become a mother, especially when you're the youngest person at the office. There's so much change that's going to be brought your way, so many obstacles that you're going to have to face, so many situations that you're going to be put into that you have to be able to adapt and you have to be flexible. And I think that as the generations, as right now with us being millennials, as our generation matures, we've had such a beautiful event happen in our life with technology. When we were young and growing up in the 80s and early 90s, cell phones didn't exist. The internet didn't exist. We've embraced change and we've thrived from it. And I think that we have an easier time with embracing change. So I'm sure some of your listeners who are younger, and then those who are mothers, oh, my God, change happens every day. You know, I think that people don't give themselves enough credit and realize that they have embraced change. People embrace it at a different speed. But for the most part, we're embracing change. It's constantly around us. It's just that in some situations you will have to embrace it faster than others.
Right, right. And some of it may seem like huge and these big changes, but, you know, like you said, we're embracing change every day, sort of whether we're operating in spaces of change every day, whether we like it or not. So if you can navigate daily, you can navigate some of these big changes that come your way. I like that. Definitely.
And you certainly can embrace the portions of the change, the large change that you speak of, and determine what about this can I bring to this change?
Yeah.
And that's professionally as well as personally. If you decide, oh my God, I got pregnant and I didn't mean to get pregnant, but I want to have the baby, but this is going to be a big life change. Okay, what about this can I embrace? What about this can I have some control over? And how can I make this a great experience for myself and my child?
Yeah, there's something that Jack Canfield says, and it definitely relates to change in this way, and I might be messing it up, but it's something about like the events and your response to it equals the outcome or something like that. And it's pretty much just saying like events are going to happen. Things are going to happen to you, around you, all of that. But the only thing that you can control is how you respond to it. And then that affects the overall outcome and how you're sort of going to feel about it, because you decide whether you're going to have a negative response, a positive response,
absolutely.
Response. So yeah, taking control of what you can sort of manage, that's perfect advice. I love that. So you recently wrote an article for Forbes titled Millennial Moms, the 2.4 Trillion Social Media Influencer. And the story featured friend to the show, Dana Bolden. And first, I want to start with, tell us how you define an influencer, because that's such a buzzed about word right now. I want to know from you, how do you define an influencer?
Sure. So 3/4 of moms say that they are sought out more often than their friends as advisors on a wide range of topics. I talked about this in the article.
Mm-hmm.
And more of them are realizing that companies are willing to pay upwards of sometimes a six-figure full-time salary to those who are able to influence, and that influence transcends onto online channels. So that is exactly what a social media mom influencer is. If a mom is posting engaging content to her friends and followers regularly like and comment on that, and her recommendations and reviews are taken to heart, that makes her possibly an influencer. At the smallest stage, a micro influencer, who is somebody with less followers than a celebrity per se, but more than the average social media user. And they have considerable influence online and offline and captivating content.
I love that breakdown. So someone could really be an influencer and not even know it, not even really realize it.
Correct.
Yeah, I like that. Because you hear that term influencer used so much now with relation to social media, online, and people that have high visibility. But the other thing is that doesn't always translate into sales either, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's why it's twofold. It really has to be somebody whose recommendations and reviews have been taken to heart and actually been put into tangible, quantifiable sales.
So let's talk a bit quickly about Dana. What was it that drew you to Dana to say, hey, I want to feature her as a millennial mom? And and I think that people would want to know this, because there's a lot of aspiring creators out there, content creators, aspiring influencers, aspiring entrepreneurs, all of this. So they're looking at your feature on Dana and they're like, I want to be featured too. I want someone to recognize me for my work. What was it about Dana that made you say, hey, she really stands out from the pack, and she's doing this sort of maybe either the right way, if you thought it was, you think it's the right way, or different, or whatever? What was it about her and her story that resonated with you and you wanted to share?
Well, I won't take away too much of Dana's story since she's going to be on the show. I don't know if we mentioned, okay, spoiler alert.
Right.
But she was just the just a combination of just so many perfect things. She was just too perfect and too good to be true to not feature. She's Black, so mm-hmm. she represents the new demographic within our society, the fact that the minorities are becoming the majorities. And right. as each generation passes, they're becoming more and more diverse. Millennials are more diverse than Generation X. Generation Z is more diverse than than Millennials. And Generation Alpha, who are our children, Dana and I, is more diverse than Generation Z. So she was a mother who represents a diverse generation, who has a child from a diverse generation. So that was interesting to me. She was a millennial. So she's in the largest demographic within the workforce and within the country right now. So I love that as well. Mm-hmm. She was an influencer who didn't have celebrity status, celebrity size followings, but she wasn't a micro influencer either. She was on The Verge. Mm-hmm. She worked with global brands and global companies, and she also serves as creative director for those brands and companies. So she's not just posting the photos that someone has taken of her or posting photos of products. She's very integrated into the campaigns of the products that she's promoting. She's behind the scenes working with the photographers, understanding exactly what her brand aesthetic is and making sure that is executed. Mm-hmm. It was just too many beautiful things. And I felt that she also had, as you mentioned, I'm a fan of data. She also had the financial data to back up the fact that she is successful as a social media mom influencer. So I had to feature her. Mm-hmm. I felt like I got lucky that nobody else had featured her just yet. It was crazy.
Right. I feel the same way about having her on the podcast. It's like people just look at the beauty of her, especially because she does do really good work with creative direction, and they look at that and they're in awe of that and they're consumed by that. And we know some people that's all they care about. But I'm like, people aren't telling her story yet. You know, she has a dynamic story. So I'm excited for her to share her story with the listeners. And kudos to you for being one of the first to feature her, especially in such a widely read platform that I know she was ecstatic about it. I just love it.
Yes.
I love the connection, the building. I love it all. That's awesome. So in speaking of the same thing, you have sort of establish yourself and you have your own influence over this millennial mom space. And I'm just curious, so our listeners know, how did you go about sort of staking your claim in this particular area?
Oh, man. So I reluctantly have established influence somewhat organically. I feel like because of my blunt, honest writing for Health and Forbes and HuffPost and Black Bride and on, mm-hmm. and because I'm a mother of two and a wife of 8 years, I think that those who follow me know I understand their ups and downs. Most
right.
people who follow me are either Black, a millennial, or a mother. Mm-hmm. So they understand that I understand their ups and downs from an overall and from a day-to-day perspective. And
right.
I think I just try to always stay blunt and honest and truthful. And through my social media accounts, I provide product recommendations, yes, but because I use those products every day. When I was cuddled up with my husband in a therapeutic blanket, I use that blanket every single day. Even in the summer, it's on my bed right now. I provide words of encouragement because sometimes that's the stuff that I need to hear and be reminded of. So
yeah.
when I go back and look at my Instagram feed, I'm happy to see those words of encouragement and have to remember, you know, the things that keep me on a positive note through the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I post photos of my life and career so that I remember the highs and the lows. And I remember not to let either one of those cups ever get too full.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good one. I like that. I like that. I like that you say the highs and the lows too, because, and I'm going to mention her in a second, but Christina of Love Brown Sugar, I'm not sure if you follow her, but
I do. I love her. Yes.
Yeah. But she was happened to watch her Instagram stories yesterday. And she was saying, today's not one of those high days. I don't really know what's going on. I can't really explain it. And she said something like, if I was in my therapist's office, she'd want me to dig deeper, but I'm not, so I'm not going to dig deeper. Like, I don't know. I have no words for it right now. But this is just how I'm feeling. I was like, wow, I love that. I love the transparency because, you know, people have this expectation when they see these slivers of our lives on social media where they think that everything's great all days, all the time. That's not the reality. That's probably a part of the relatability, right?
That is a part of the relatability, and that's offering indirect support for her followers who are women, whether she realizes it or not. And I just think that women supporting women is so important. And by nature, by definition, to support something is to hold it up. And I just think that life is easier if a woman has another woman behind her holding her up, playing the role of advisor or confidant or a shoulder to cry on, or example of what works or what doesn't, like love, brown sugar, all those things. Because I feel like personally, whenever I'm faced with a new life stage or a challenge, when I got married, when I had my two children, as I moved and navigated through the professional world, and or as I got new bills, it takes me a long time to tell someone about the problems or wins associated with it. So I applaud her. And that's just dumb pride on my part. But after I finally break down or share my story, even my wins with a woman, I always say to myself, what took you so long to just vent and say what was going on, you know? For years, I think it was because I was supported by my grandmother, and I had her to be in my corner. But after she died, I was lost for a long time and didn't know why. And it was because I had no one holding me up. So kudos to her for being indirectly and not even realizing it, that she's holding other women up by just telling her story and saying, I'm having a bad day.
I love that. You are such a great interviewee because you actually just answered a question that I didn't even ask yet, but I was going to ask.
I love it.
So on this show, we're not in the business of selling people dreams either. So when you see content creators like Dana or Christina of Love Brown Sugar, and Christina, for those who don't know listening, she currently has a national ad campaign running now with Dove. So what does it take behind the scenes, in your opinion, to get to the level that where you're sort of like in demand, to get to the level of the Danas and the Christinas? And although we know that maybe they don't even think that they've reached where they're trying to go yet, but they're visible and they have achieved great things at this point. So what do you think it takes to sort of get to that place where you're in demand?
I think that it takes a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. And to your point, I can't even speak on Christina and Dana's story because I'm sure that they have a strategic plan in place as to where they want to be in the next 5-10 years. When we were talking before we started recording, you said that you talked to Dana 2 years ago. She was talking about leaving her full-time job for this plan that she had. So these two women definitely are strategic in their thinking. They've taken the time to think about the what if. And examine their external landscapes, understand the power of social media, understand the power of influence, understand the power of the Black voice right now and Black girl magic and everything that goes along with that. And they're leveraging those opportunities. So it's a part of being strategic, but it's also a part of leveraging opportunities. And I think that you don't always have to reinvent the wheel, but you should be able to provide the spokes. And I don't know if people know a lot about, but, spokes made vehicles lighter and faster when they came out and were added to wheels. So those women are successful because to me, they have managed to provide the spokes. They didn't reinvent the wheel. They didn't create social media influencers, but they reinvented the wheel and crafted it and made it in such a way that it is in demand by brands.
Wow, that's perfect. That's perfect. And it also goes back to the idea of strategy, too. Like you mentioned before, probably surveying the landscape, what's happening, what's not happening, where can I fill in some of the holes and whatnot, and using that to their advantage. But like you said, not reinventing the wheel. I like that. I definitely like that. So you write about part-time work, and you're very familiar with the folks at Flex Jobs, where people can find sort of like telecommuting positions and whatnot. So what's like the most strategic way or approach to transitioning to entrepreneurship, let's say, for someone that is just feeling like they want to try something different and entrepreneurship might be the thing? What would you say is like a strategic way to go about doing that?
I mean, especially entrepreneurship, of course, Entrepreneurship is scary, but mm-hmm. for those who are truly meant to do it, it's like a nagging feeling in the back of your head that sleep and an old fashioned just can't silence. So, I mean, just like motherhood, it comes with a great amount of fear and doubt. And let me just say, kudos to the moms who are becoming entrepreneurs, because you're willing to have more than one kid at the same time. Because owning a company is just like having a baby. But
right.
I highly recommend moms who are interested in becoming influencers or going into entrepreneurship, try working from home first and visit flexjobs.com. Mm-hmm. Why not continue working from the comfort of your own home, paying bills and keeping your insurance, while you're also exploring entrepreneurship? And then you can use that income that you have, that extra income you have from influencing or from starting your business, to experience new adventures with your family and have a little bit of a savings and a cushion should you ever get in the boat like I was in, which was started a business 2 years before a recession.
Mm-hmm.
And the good thing about flex jobs and why I recommend them is because they have a number of opportunities in different professions, some of which don't even require a college degree. Mm-hmm. And you would be surprised what companies like American Express, Amazon, so on and so forth, post on their site.
Interesting. Good to know. Now, the concept of switch, pivot, or quit is largely about action in transitioning from where you sort of are to where you might want to be. However, I know that there is someone out there listening right now that's thinking, this sounds good for them, but I have responsibilities and I can't take those types of like chances or risks. So what tips would you give to sort of overcoming that fear or doubt of venturing out on your own or just trying something new, especially when you have children or a family or just, you know, plain old big girl responsibilities? You know, what tips would you give about sort of overcoming that fear and doubt?
I hope that they listen to this entire podcast, because I think that you and I have been great about keeping a consistent theme. It's important to look at your strategy, which is your mm-hmm. goal, which is going to help you grow. And it's also important to embrace change. So what is the end goal? What strategy do you want to put into place? What is the end goal? I have to repeat that.
Mm-hmm.
And then embrace change, the second part of what we discussed, and take bits and pieces of that and determine what you can control, what is comfortable for you to embrace in the short term. What are the milestones attached to that? Where can you find support? Who can offer support to help you reach that, what we call in the quiver world, that BHAG, that big, hairy, aggressive goal?
Right. Very true. Very true. And sometimes I think that we play with this idea of fear and we let it carry too much weight in our heads and in our minds. And
Right. The
way I look at it is, you know, if you want to be fearful of anything, be fearful of dying without doing what you really wanted to do.
Absolutely.
Like, that's what you need to be fearful of. Mm-hmm. Not the day-to-day things. You need to be fearful of just not really, and it sounds so cliche now and everything, but not really living out your purpose, not really living in a way that you felt like you really owned your life and you were true to yourself and you just did everything that you wanted to do. You may have had some wins, you may have had some losses, but in the end, you can say, I tried. I did
fear the consequences of that as well.
Be fearful
of the consequences of not living your dream or not at least trying for the goal that you have in mind, because there are physical and mental and emotional consequences to that.
Yeah. And it's not like we're saying, you know, get out there and quit your job and be an entrepreneur or be an influencer or whatever, because, you know, I was saying to you before we started recording, you know, you have to be aware of the longevity in these spaces. And that's one thing I want to ask you about is, do you see longevity in the area of, let's say, social media influence? And maybe do you think that there's a lifespan for influencers? And when I say lifespan for influencers, it just means like, can you be like the 50-year-old influencer?
You certainly can be the 50-year-old influencer. I remember seeing an Instagram account of a woman who's well into her senior years, and she dresses very ostentatiously, and she's like really out there, and she's an influencer. There are brands that are coming to her because she has built a niche, and she is engaging and unique. And I think that it doesn't matter what age you are, you can be an influencer. The sustainability and the scalability comes when you're able to expand your influence into different avenues and different channels. So you're not just a social media influencer. You're now like Lily Singh, where you're an actual personality.
Right, right.
And if you don't think, influencing has any type of scalability or sustainability, I encourage you to watch an episode of Keeping Up with the Kardashians from 10 years ago and ask how much Kim Kardashian was making then, and then look at her net worth and the net worth that she has leveraged her family to have and her family's significant others to have and people that have worked with her as her hair and makeup artist and so on and so forth. It definitely has scalability and it definitely has sustainability. This is the way of our world now.
Right, right. And speaking of net worth, so you mentioned, or worth period, you mentioned in a previous interview how you had a difficult time understanding your own sort of value and charging your worth when you first started off as an entrepreneur and doing consulting work. How did you, if you can think back, how did you overcome that hurdle? And do you have any advice for others who may be currently in a similar position?
It was not easy, and I hate to play the race or the gender card, but as a woman and as a Black woman, I think that so many of us will underestimate our worth just to have a seat at the table, as Sheryl Sandberg says, and I don't, or to lean in. And I think that we have just got to stop doing that. I look at the new Black woman who was hired for Uber, and I read somewhere recently that she said it's very important to know your worth, to go in and have what if you're looking to apply for a new job, or if you're a consultant, if you know what your competitors are charging for that same service, meet them or exceed them. Have that high number. You already know that women are paid less than men. You already know that Black women are paid less than women, than other races. So as long as you're able to research what your competitors are paying, solicit the advice of your financial advisor. The way that I got over it was I was charging way less an hour than other agencies, and I was going above and beyond. And I would be on call for clients anytime that they needed me. And my husband, as the CFO of my company, was like, what are you doing? We could be making such a larger profit percentage if you would just raise your prices. And I was like, but I'm young and they could work with anybody and I'm just a boutique firm. And 9 times out of 10, the larger organizations, even CPG, like really large consumer product goods and large companies, want those scrappy independent agencies because that's where the real creativity lies and the real innovation lies. So they will pay for that creativity and that innovation on that small scale. There's just so many negative doubt, you know, the nose in your head, and you have all of these reasons why. But, you know, there's a lot of research to support in knowing your worth. And exceeding it and presenting a offer or a proposal that exceeds it.
Right. So it's like your first step is to truly understand your own value. So then you're confident enough when you go in front of other people and you tell them this is how much it's going to cost. You send them the proposal or whatever. Right. You're very confident in it because you know what you bring to the table.
Know your worth and know the worth of your competitors.
And don't
let the voice in your head that says, but that competitor is a man, that competitor has been doing it for X number of years, that competitor has worked for such and such. Don't let that get into your head.
Right. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And, you know, there's some people that might be listening who are thinking of working for themselves full time and or thinking of just starting like a side hustle to sort of dip their toe in that space, but they may not know what to do first. Do you have any advice for maybe like first steps on sort of getting out there and pushing yourself out there to try something new, like a side hustle, or maybe even to try working for yourself?
I do, and I was asked this recently by another podcast, and I think that it's the best way to determine what you're going to love in the long run, something that's not just going to be a fly-by-night side hustle to make money. If you sit down and make a list of your strengths and weaknesses, and then you also make a list of things that you're good at professionally, and then areas of opportunity almost. If you combine the list of strengths and things you're good at professionally, so strengths will be a little bit more personal, you'll get a good understanding of what could possibly have longevity. And then the weaknesses and the opportunities, those are the areas, you know, not necessarily that you want to stay away from, but you may face obstacles you may have to improve upon. So, for example, if I know that I'm a people person and I like to go to parties and I'm really engaging and entertaining and fun, and at the same time, professionally, I'm a good salesperson, I can close and whatnot, I might want to go into entrepreneurship, because entrepreneurship is sales at the end of the day, no matter how you're an entrepreneur. But I might want to go into party planning, or hosting networking events, or hosting meetups, or some, or launching my own social media app, something like that. But I know at the same time, when it comes down to actually hunker down and pull out my organizational skills, I might need that might be an area of opportunity for me. So I might need to hire somebody to help me out, or I might have to bring in another partner who can handle the administrative and the organizational tasks.
So understanding sort of who you are and where you lay in the landscape of things, so that you can then strategically make your next move.
That's right. That's right.
So I want to find out, touching a bit back more on you personally, have you, and you have so much knowledge, and I love that you share it with everyone through the digital space of writing for different websites and everything. And then it seems like you're doing a lot more podcast interviews now. And I want to know, have you figured out your why in life? And if so, would you mind sharing it with us?
Sure. My why is to tell the story of a generation, a gender, and a race. And that's my why, because it's me. I'm very passionate about me.
As you should be.
I'm passionate about millennials. I'm very passionate about women. I'm very passionate about Black people. That is me. So I'm passionate about their hopes, their fears, their challenges, their everyday struggles, and their wins. And my why is having someone listen to the stories that I tell and make a positive impact as a result of that story. So that applies to my writing, if somebody reads an article and it inspires them personally. And it also applies to the perspectives that I provide in my professional career. If I'm able to provide data, qualitative or quantitative, and provide insights that change the direction of the business strategies for my corporation, then that's a win. That's success. And as long as I'm building or improving upon the narratives that are told, then I've been successful.
And I guess that really ties into my last and final question. What does success mean or look like for you in big picture?
Yeah. Well, I would say that that's exactly what it is.
I love it. Well, is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about you, or about what you have sort of coming up, or about millennial moms, or anything else that we haven't touched on?
I just encourage everyone to follow me on my social channels at CMICHELCARTER at C. Michelle Carter. That is through Twitter and Instagram. And visit my website, ChristineMichelleCarter.com. Hopefully you don't mind a little profanity with your entrepreneurship and success stories. And hopefully you don't mind a little bad kids with your inspirational quotes.
I love it. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. This has been an amazing interview.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And as always, you guys, just keep killing it.